Your speaker is Claude Farr.
Tonight I'll be talking about the four beastly kingdoms, looking in the book of Daniel, chapter 7. And so if you'd like to follow along tonight, I'll be reading, I guess, about all of that chapter. So you might want to turn to the seventh chapter of the book of Daniel. The reason I decided to speak on this tonight is that I think I mentioned Wednesday night I'd seen the movie Left Behind, and of course the book was out before the movie. I didn't want to waste my time reading through that whole book. I don't read very much fiction. But I did take the time to see the movie. And one thing that I noticed about the movie, and I assume it's true in the book, the presentation was to try to present, or it's a fictitious story, that would correspond to Bible teaching. And I sat there and watched that, and they'd be discussing something, and they'd say, you know, just like in Ezekiel 38. Because they didn't read Ezekiel 38, they just said that, and that settled it. Or, as tonight, just like it says in Daniel chapter 7. And that was scattered throughout the movie, and I guess the book too, for those of you who have read the book. And my thought was, as I listened, I thought, you know, how many people either read that book or saw that movie and thought that Ezekiel 38 or Daniel 7 or any of the other references given had anything to do with what that movie was about? And I guess most people probably thought there was something at least in those portions of the Bible that had to do with the rapture and that sort of thing. Of course, when I heard them say it, I kind of knew what Daniel chapter 7 was about and knew that it had nothing to do with it. So what I thought to do tonight really is just read Daniel chapter 7, see how much there is in there about the rapture, about events surrounding the 7 years of tribulation, the second coming of Christ, and all of those things. Of course, you'll see as I read this that there's nothing in there about that, but we'll just read from the book of Daniel, chapter 7, and the vision which he saw in a dream and the interpretation of that vision. Chapter 7, verse 2, Daniel spake and said, this is him telling the dream and the visions upon his head, upon his bed. Verse 2, Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens strove upon the great sea. And the four beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. The stirring of the winds upon the sea probably represents tumults within the nations. That's in the world. That's the usual representation of it. And then four beasts came up out of the sea, and then he describes each of those four. Verse 4. The first was like a lion, and had eagle's wings, and I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth, and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. So the first beast, like a lion. Then Daniel 7, verse 5. And behold, another beast, a second, like a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth and between its teeth, and they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. Of course, the idea of the bear and the three ribs is this was a devouring, whatever it represents. We'll see in a minute what it represents. Verse 6, after this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon its back of its four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, terrible, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and had 10 horns. And I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, for whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. So that's at least the first part of the vision, or the dream, four beasts. The four beasts, and I'll just say now, we'll see it when we get to the interpretation, but a little bit later, but the four beasts represents four kingdoms. The lion represents the Babylonian kingdom or empire. The bear would represent the Medo-Persian kingdom. The leopard, the Greek kingdom. And then the fourth, the dreadful and terrible, the Roman kingdom. Now, the way I know that is because I've read Daniel chapter 2. And I think you will probably remember Daniel chapter 2, in which there is the image that Daniel saw. And in that image, there was the head of gold, and there was the arm, breast of silver, and the belly and thighs of brass, and then the legs of iron, and the feet, part iron and part of clay. And then in the interpretation of that, there's very plainly four kingdoms, just as we'll see down in verse 18, this represents four kings. Four kingdoms, and said to Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, you're the head of gold, you're the first one. Well, if you know history, we all study world history in school, there were four empires. And the four that I've just named, the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, the Greek, and the Roman, those four empires just came right in order, just like it's presented in the book of Daniel, chapter 2. And chapter 7 that we're looking at tonight is really the same thing, except a little more detail is given in the latter part of it with regard to that fourth kingdom, the Roman kingdom. And so you have the lion representing the Babylonian empire. You have the bear, the Medes and the Persians, a devouring kingdom, the bear with the three ribs in his mouth. You have the leopard with the four hands, heads, representing the Greek empire. And of course, the Greek empire had four parts. And when it eventually broke up, it was divided into four parts. And then the terrible and the dreadful Roman Empire. And then ten horns. And we'll talk about what they mean as we get to the interpretation. But ten horns and then a little horn. And there's a lot of focus going to be in the interpretation about this little horn that came up. And, well, it spake great things about himself. Boastful, this little horn. And so that's the first part of the vision. Second part of the vision begins in verse 9. And we've seen the four beasts. But now we see the Ancient of Days. I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did set, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was like a fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousand thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. And the judgment was set, and the books were opened. And I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed, and given to the burning flames. As concerning the rest of the beast, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and for a time. Well, it's obvious who the Ancient of Days is. That's God sitting on the throne. You can tell by the description and really from what continues in the chapter. And so what's being said in this part of the vision, or seen in this part of the vision, is there's the Ancient of Days. The thrones are all cast down. But the Ancient of Days sits upon his throne. And being served by 10,000 times 10,000. And the judgment is set. And the key to notice here is that beast, that all the beasts, but particularly that fourth beast with the little horn and all that boasting, judgment is upon it. If you look at the last half of verse 11. I beheld even till the beast was slain, his body destroyed, and given to the burning flames. So whatever that beast represents, it means that in the vision, this beast is going to be destroyed. And then the last part of the vision, before you actually get to the interpretation, is in verses 13 and 14. And I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days. And they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom. And all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. Well, we know, of course, the Son of Man would be Jesus. And he's given a kingdom. Very clearly pointed out in verse 14, there was given to him dominion and glory and the kingdom. And it was a universal kingdom. All peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. It's an everlasting kingdom. And this, of course, was presented in Daniel chapter 2 also, the kingdom that would never be destroyed. But the Son of Man's kingdom, it says, his dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. Now, the movie didn't go into all of this, but then I know the doctrine, the theory. And that is that, just like this says, verse 14, Jesus, the Son of Man, is going to have a kingdom. It's going to be a universal kingdom. And it's going to be an everlasting kingdom. That much we just read. The theory is that the kingdom is going to be set up when He comes back to this earth, and He will set the kingdom up and reign from Jerusalem. And so the kingdom is going to be His at His second coming, when He comes in the clouds. One little thing was missed in that interpretation. Let me read verse 13 again. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of the Man came with the clouds of heaven, and notice this if you're looking, and came from the Ancient of Days. Of course, that's not what it said. I just put that in. That's the premillennial view. It actually says, came to the Ancient of Days. See, there's two comings of the Son of Man on the clouds, or two that we have in the Scriptures. You know, He ascended. It's recorded in Acts chapter 1. He ascended up, and they watched Him. The apostles watched Him ascend into the clouds as He went to the Ancient of Days. They couldn't see the Ancient of Days, but they saw Him leave in the clouds. And then, of course, the Bible teaches us that when He comes, again, He's going to come into the clouds. They were told then, just as you've seen Him go, He'll come back. This is not talking about the second coming of Christ. This is talking about the first going. This is not talking about Jesus coming from the Ancient of Days and setting up a kingdom. This is talking about His going to the Ancient of Days and receiving a kingdom. And so when you read it that way, it fits with all the rest of the Bible. All those passages that talk about Jesus now at the right hand of God, reigning. Acts chapter 2, where it speaks of His, where the Apostle Peter spoke of the fact that he went and that He's seated on the right hand of God. And all those other New Testament passages that speak of the kingdom that He is now reigning over and that we're a part of. That all fits exactly with what is being said here, because this is not about Jesus coming from the Ancient of Days back to the earth and setting up a kingdom. But this is way back in the book of Daniel, long before the first coming of Christ. And it's talking about the ascension of Jesus back to the Ancient of Days to receive the kingdom. And so the premillennial view, of course, has the kingdom in exactly the wrong spot. Then we want to read on. That's the vision as Daniel saw it. Now let's look at the interpretation of the vision, what God was trying to tell him. Verse 15, beginning. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made me to know the interpretation of the things. These great beasts, which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. So this represents the four great kings that arose and established those four kingdoms that are mentioned in the second chapter. Verse 18, but the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Now, that's just kind of the general meaning of the vision. The details continue. But the general meaning of the vision is that these four beasts represent some world kingdoms that are going to rise. But that ultimately, the saints of the Most High, the saints of the Most High, ultimately, they will be the ones to rule and to reign. Now, those kingdoms, earthly kingdoms, will not continue forever. So that's the general meaning of this whole vision. And then he gets into some of the details. Daniel wanted to know about the details. Verse 19. Then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron, and his nails of brass, which devoured and brake in pieces, stamped the residue with his feet, and of the ten horns that were in his head, and the other which came up, and before whom three fell, even of that horn that had the eyes and a mouth spake great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. So Daniel's interested in knowing a little more detail about this fourth beast, and particularly the ten horns and that little horn. And so verse 21, and I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Well, we know a little bit now about that little horn. He says, I watched that little horn until it made war with the saints. This little horn then, which represents a king, one of the kingdoms, one of the kings in the kingdom, but this little horn is a persecuting power. The same horn made war with the saints. and did so successfully, at least for a time, and prevailed against them. So, in the four empires, there are going to be some kings. And then one of those rulers, one of those kings, is going to be noted for his persecution of the saints to such an extent that actually, at least for a time, he prevails against them. But then, of course, it doesn't last forever. Verse 22, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High. That is, judgment was upon that little beast and that little horn. And eventually, it's the saints of the Most High that would be victorious. So it gives us a little more, some additional details about the meaning. But Daniel wanted to know still more, and so in the rest of the chapter we're given even more details about what this is about. So let me read verse 23 down through 27. That's the rest of the interpretation. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth. And we've already identified that as the Roman kingdom, the four, the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, the Greek, and then the Romans. From Daniel's time, Daniel lived during the time of the Babylonian Empire, and just count history, there's four. And so, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall divide the whole earth, and shall tread it down, and break it in pieces. And the ten horns out of this kingdom are ten kings that shall arise. And another shall arise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue three kings. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and dividing of time. But the judgment shall be set, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominion shall serve and obey him. So, some more details about this fourth beast. Had ten horns, and it says very plainly the ten horns represents ten kings. And then the little horn represents another king. And obviously you can tell from the reading, this is talking about that ultimately that power that persecuted Christians ultimately would be destroyed. And the Christians would be victorious. And some people read this and it's okay to read this and say this is kind of general, just a generic symbol, not supposed to look too much at the details, but it just kind of generally symbolizes the power that persecuted the saints of God and the ultimate destruction of such powers and the victory that would be to God's saints. And some interpret it that way as just being very, very symbolic. And that may be true. But it's interesting, if you look at this, if you look at the actual history, you see, it fits history perfect. I mean, the fourth kingdom, or the fourth empire, the Roman Empire, ten kings, or emperors, we would call them, ten rulers. And that's the way it is in history. And I don't maybe some of you have memorized all their names, but I'll read them. I have to look. I don't have the ten memorized in order. But the first emperor of Rome was Augustus. Now, not Julius Caesar. But Augustus Caesar was actually the first recognized as the emperor. And so the list is, these are the ten. Augustus, Tiberius, you remember him from the New Testament. Caligula, I don't think he's mentioned in the New Testament, but every time I hear that name, it's just, you know, he's about as bad as you could get, Caligula was. Claudius, I don't think I was named after him. Nero, we all know the wickedness of Nero. I doubt if you've heard, unless you've done some reading in this area, of Galbo, Otho, and Vitellius. But if you've learned about the destruction of Jerusalem under Vespasian and then his son Titus, then of course you would have seen those names. Those are the first ten emperors of this fourth kingdom or empire. Those ten. Any history would list them. And then the 11th one, and of course the ten horns, the ten kings. And then another little horn comes up. And it says, this is another king that comes after them. And the next one is Domitian. Some interesting things about Domitian. Domitian claimed to be divine. And Domitian was the first of the emperors to really systematically decide to persecute Christians because they were Christians. Now, Nero, of course, you remember earlier than that, he needed a scapegoat since he burned Rome and he had to blame it on somebody, so he kind of blamed the Christians. But Domitian is the one who is in history, secular history, as well as the secret history that we have from people like Eusebius. Domitian was the first emperor who really set out deliberately to destroy the Christians. And that's the way it's presented right here. Verse 24, the 10 horns out of this kingdom are the 10 kings that shall arise. And then, and another shall arise after them, the 11th. And he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings. And then it says, and this is his person, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and shall be given into the, and they shall be given into his hands, until a time, times, and dividing of time. Now there might be some question about this. There's no question here that he's presented as a persecuting power. Might be some question about it, the time, times, and dividing of times. The book of Revelation, you know, you have this all the time. This idea of, you know, it might be 42 months, or it might be time, times, and half time, or it might be given, and I've got the exact number of days, but 3.5 years. Don't know for sure, but it's a pretty good guess. You see, Elijah had to flee for his life, and he was there for 3.5 years. You know, the ravens fed him, and you remember that story? Very probable that in the book of Daniel, and then in the book of Revelation, when he uses that 3.5 year period several times, it's a period in which God's people had to run, starting with Elijah. And so it's very likely that that's what that means, but whether we know that or not, we can tell the general gist of this particular passage that we're looking at. But then verse 26, after the persecution, but judgment was set, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And you know, we worship and serve God today, and we don't worry about old Domitian at all, or any of his powers. That's long since gone. Been taken away. Then verse 27, the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and dominion shall serve and obey him. It might not always look like that, but the saints are in charge. Christ is in charge. Sometimes it don't look that way. But the kingdom belongs to Christ and to his people. And even though sometimes it looks differently, it's never the case. The kingdom always belongs, the rule always belongs to God's people. And it won't be totally manifested as presented here until eternity. But it always belongs to God's people. So I thought it'd be good to look at Daniel chapter 7 tonight and view the fact that there are people just saying, Daniel chapter 7, and like that has something. What does this chapter have to do, if you saw the movie or read the book, or if you've heard any of the premillennial views about Jesus coming back to this earth, what does this have to do with it? Absolutely nothing. But now there's a lot in the book of Revelation that corresponds to Daniel, and I want to look at a passage or two from the book of Revelation just to show the connection. Obviously, John, when he wrote the book of Revelation, had read the book of Daniel. And I just want to look at two different selections. Revelation 13, verse 2. And this, of course, is in the book of Revelation, it's talking about the same thing that Daniel is talking about, this fourth kingdom, and uses the image of a beast. Chapter 13, verse 2. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. Now, I read that just so we could kind of pick up. Where did Daniel get this idea of a leopard and a bear and a lion? Sounds like Daniel, doesn't it? Except it's in reverse order. Now, that's interesting. In the book of Daniel, it's the lion, the bear, and the leopard. In the book of Revelation, it's just the reverse. It's the leopard, the bear, and the lion. Why do you suppose that is? Well, I don't know for sure. But you see, Daniel was living at the time of the lion, and he was looking that way. He was looking down history in the future. And he's naming them in the order in which they were to come. John, he's on the other end of it, and he's looking back. And so he just names them backwards. Now, I'm not sure, but that's kind of it. That's why they used the same thing, but they put them in reverse order because they were looking from two totally different perspectives. Daniel, Revelation rather, chapter 17. again, and we're not, of course, reading the whole chapter, but study the book of Revelation, you'll know that chapter 13 and now chapter 17, that we're dealing with the Roman Empire and its persecuting of the Christians. But look at verse 10 and 11. And there are seven kings, five are fallen, one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short time. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. Now, this, as I said, is obvious if you read chapter 17, has to do with the Roman ruler, seven of them. And then there's one more, the beast represented one more here, and eight. How can that be when you read the book of Daniel, and you have ten and one more, and that makes 11? Who's right? Daniel or John, when you talk about the number of rulers in Rome leading up to this particular one, to Domitian. Is Domitian the eighth one, as John says, or the 11th one, as Daniel says? Well, that just depends on how you want to count, because three of those rulers that Daniel mentioned, three of them, the one I said you probably never heard of, they were just there for a little while and they hardly even count. Now, Daniel counted them. But you remember he said that three of them were uprooted? He started with ten and brought in the 11th, but three of those first ones he took out. You take three out from ten, you got seven. And add one more, you got eight. And so it's beautiful to look at it, that these two writers, one of them Daniel way back in the Old Testament, and John then in the New Testament, could write about the same Roman Empire, and one of them talk about 11, and the other talk about 8. And if you read any secular history about these rulers, you will find that it's generally recognized that these three were just kind of, they tried to grasp the power of Rome, so you could call them emperors, but then you could say they never really got the power. And it's kind of presented both ways in the Scriptures. And that's just kind of the beauty of the way the Bible is set up, to present both ideas so clearly, and then make it very clear, though in Daniel, that while he talks about those ten, he recognizes that three of them, some way, they were rooted up. They really didn't count like the rest of them. This is the beauty of the way, the accuracy of the Scriptures. Well, I just thought tonight I'd look at Daniel chapter 7. Those of you who talk to your premillennial friends, you probably maybe find it interesting to know the meaning of some of these chapters. When you're talking with people and they say, you know, well, like in Daniel 7 or Ezekiel 38 or some of the other passages, you need to know what's the content of those passages so you'll be able to study with them and see that, you know, this is what Daniel 7 is about. It has nothing to do with the book or the movie Left Behind and the things that were in that book. This is Daniel 7 is totally different from what was in the movie. Might be if there's a person here tonight who is not a Christian. We've not talked about how to become a Christian, but if you've already studied the Bible and understand that you need to believe and repent of your sins, confess your faith, and be baptized for the remission of sins, if you've already studied and understand that and want to become a Christianite,